episode of Snaps and Golf Claps. Today I'm joining you before the first light of the morning and just sipping on some coffee. And one of the ideas that I've recently had is to set things up, you know, come up to the studio, especially on the mornings. Like, there are certain mornings that I am just, my brain is on go. I'm thinking about a lot of things. And I think things that are worth having a conversation about. Like I've said plenty of times before, I'm no expert. I'm far from it. But I am very observant. I'm very introspective. I like to ask questions. I like to learn about things. And the mornings are where I do my best thinking, I believe. I like to take time to just be in silence. And in that silence, I like to be an observer of my thoughts. I think it's important to take time and sit with your thoughts. Not because you're trying to change them. Not because you're trying to do anything to alter the thought process that you're having. But rather to observe, to understand. I think part of why people have a hard time sitting with their thoughts is because they're trying to change them. Or even because they don't align with them anymore. Right? Imagine you sitting and your thoughts are flowing in a million miles a minute. And they're all of a version of you that no longer exists. You try your hardest to suppress them. You try your hardest to change the topic. You try your hardest to do all these things. And that's why it's overwhelming. I was speaking to a guy that goes to the coffee shop that I would frequent before I moved. I went back over there just to say hello to some friends. And this guy, he's a regular. And he said something that I really appreciated about our responsibility to sit with our thoughts, to understand them, as opposed to trying to change them and suppress them. And this guy is actually an expert, or at least has way more expertise than I do, as he is currently pursuing a PhD in psychology. And he was explaining how thought suppression, feeling suppression, emotional suppression comes back tenfold, because they're not meant to be suppressed. They're meant to be felt and moved through. One of the recurring themes that have been, or thoughts that have been arising this past week, 2 weeks. I say 2 weeks because I didn't do an episode last week. I had family in town, and as you guys know, whenever I have people visiting, I prioritize their visit. And I don't like to can episodes. Like, I don't like to record a bunch of episodes in a row because I have new experiences and new thoughts every week. So, not saying that canning episodes would water those thoughts down, but sometimes I got new stuff to say. Anyways, one of the things that continuously has been coming into my mind is, why do we seek to control situations relating to things that we have never experienced? A lot of the difficulty and the resistance in life that we face, that we endure, comes from our setting of expectations onto something that we've never done, but rather something that someone else has done that we have seen them do. And this has been something that I've really been working out in my mind, because if that's the case, there are a lot of things that are going to be really difficult for a lot of people based off of, if we're just looking at it based off of a single example, right? What about our ability as individuals? If I go to LeBron James or any other basketball player, even if it's a recreational basketball player, and I said dunking is really hard, I would be correct in that statement for me, but not for them, because they have natural abilities and talents that allow them to do that. So obviously that's a very physical example, but what about other things? I find math challenging. There are people that don't. So for me to say math is hard and say that as a definitive statement, it is for me maybe, but what if I'm speaking to one of my nephews or a friend that have mathematical acuity? Then what? We allow people to project these things that they have endured and they have exhibited in their own lives onto ours, and we take them as truth. Maybe it's because of who they are, the relationship we have with them. But it's not always based off of their experience. Sometimes it's based off of what somebody they cared about or they love or they respect told them. And I think about this a lot because I remember when I was in sixth grade, I wanted to apply to a school of the arts. And I remember my dad being like, I don't think you should apply to this school. I think you should apply to a more STEM-based school, like science, technology, engineering, mathematics, because art can't be a career. You can't make money off of art. So 12-year-old me, 11-year-old me was like, well, my heart's broken, of course, because this is what I do all day and this is what I think about. I draw all day. I bang on pots all day. I'm always doing something creative. But here's my dad telling me, who my dad is a very X's and O's, ones and zeros guy. He's a retired computer programmer. Here's my dad, somebody that I love and respect, telling me I'm wasting my time. And as the years went on, I believed it. Because this is somebody that I respected and I looked up to in certain regards. And I saw what he was doing and I was like, you know what, maybe I do that. Because I do like technology too. And as time progressed, art is all I thought about. Creating is all I thought about, all I wanted to do. And even till when I got to high school, it wasn't until I got to high school that I had my art teacher, who I was in art class. I was working on some stuff and she goes, hey, would you like to stay after school to work on some projects with us? I said, sure. This was maybe 11th grade. So this has been 6 years, six school years at this point, since my dad told me art isn't a career. And this teacher saw something in me. The fact that I couldn't stop thinking about art, I was always creating something. And she brought that out of me again. And so now when I sit and reflect about that time in my life, for a very long time, I felt, I wouldn't say anger, but frustration about that. And I also felt like I didn't want to pursue any creative endeavors because I don't want to disappoint my dad. But now I'm at a point where I'm realizing this. He wasn't coming from a place of trying to discourage me, but he was coming from a place of his personal experience because my dad doesn't have a creative bone in his body. He likes art, he appreciates art, but he is not an artist or creative himself. He's a very analytical guy. So of course, to him, there's no way you can make money creating. Doesn't make sense. It's not possible, right? But it's not the same to someone that is passionate about it and that does it any moment they can. If this is all I think about, this is all I do, if this is all I want to do, there's a possibility that I will make money off of it. But it's also like, is that all it's for? To make money off of? Is that all our passions and endeavors are for? The things that we love, does it have to only be to make money off of it? Can it be just for the sake of doing it out of love? One of my friends from the coffee shop this weekend said something beautiful. We were talking about why it's important to seriously consider pursuing your passions. And we talked about the fears, fear of wasting time, fear of not succeeding, and all of these things. But we also talked about what exists simultaneously, and it's the overwhelming day-to-day thought and rumination on the what if. The what if. And he said something to the effect of, we have been conditioned to focus on the survival aspect, making sure you have the money to pay your bills, to pay your necessities, etc. But once all of that is done, what stands? What stands? What do we care about? What are we doing? We fall into this cycle of thinking about just the next way to survive. Is life only about surviving? Is it all about surviving? At what point do we give ourselves permission to live, to thrive? Sure, you have to take care of the things that you have to take care of, your necessities. But what about the things that take care of the deeper you, the heart, the soul? How do we feed that? And is there a price tag on it? Is there a price tag on feeding the soul? Would it not be worth our time to spend energy pursuing the things that we love? And like, I understand, I'm not sitting here pretending like you don't need money. Everyone needs money in this world. But money is nothing more than a tool. It's not the end goal. It's not the end result. So let's say money is a tool. Once you have sufficient money to your standards, then what are you going to do? If you spent your entire life pursuing this arbitrary number, this dollar amount, and you reach it, then what? What are you going to pursue then? What are you going to do then? I think it would be hard to figure that out. And I'm going through that right now, right? Because I'm in a place where within the next couple of months, I have to pursue other opportunities for employment. And it's been very bittersweet because I'm thinking about a lot of things. And a part of me is really pushing and gunning for that big, big job. All in the guise of, I do this for a few years, I rack up, I dip, and I pursue my dreams. But I would be a fool to say that it would be easy to walk away from a lot of money. Not because money is anything other than a tool, but because of the comfort money brings, the peace of mind, the not having to think about other things, the not needing to calculate every penny to figure out what to do, than not having to choose between the higher quality foods and the not so high quality foods, and not having to think about how much that flight costs to go visit your family, the not having to think about or do any mental gymnastics to pay your bills, the having all your bills paid off at the end of the month and being able to buy yourself whatever you want. It's not easy to walk from that. It gives us a sense of like a pseudo freedom. But there is no freedom if I am consumed by the thought of what if. What if I just walk away from it all right now and pursue my passions, my dreams? And what are you actually scared of? What are you actually scared of? If you lead with passion, true passion and authenticity in everything that you do, it doesn't matter what you do. You're the common denominator in everything that you do. Therefore, with that passion and authenticity, everything that you touch turns to gold. If you have something that's eating at you in a real way, it might be worth considering pursuing it with all that you have in you. And release the expectations, because like I said earlier in this episode, we put expectations on things that we have never done. So this idea that, oh, you can't pursue X, Y, and Z, the market is saturated, everybody's doing that, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but everybody isn't you. Everybody is not you. You are the unique thing. You are the fingerprint in this whole operation. If you walk into something with passion and authenticity, it doesn't matter that the market is quote unquote saturated. And also, it's not actually saturated. We just live in these vacuums on social media that make us feel like everything is saturated and everything is, everyone's doing it and yada, yada, yada. But everyone is not you. Everyone doesn't have your ideas. And so what that everybody's doing, and we could all be doing the same thing, but that's switching over to that abundant mindset. We can all be doing the same thing and we could all be successful at it because we are all individuals. So if you have that thing that you feel like you are a bit apprehensive to pursue it because everyone is doing it, do it anyways. And do it for you and do it well. But if you're going to do it, you better do it all the way. Gone are the days where we're halfway doing things. Because if you love something and you're passionate about something, you don't pursue it halfway. I'll end with this, but my friend earlier this week made a comment. We were chatting about some stuff, but this has been running through my head on repeat. And it's, who are you to you, or who are you for you? So when you look in the mirror, like, who are you? It's a scary thought sometimes. When you look in the mirror and there's nothing to say. Or when you look in the mirror and you're saying what you think you should say. But be honest. And it's okay if there's nothing to say to that question. But it is not okay if you choose to go through life without exploring that question. Awareness is the first part of everything. Once you're aware of something, you are able to then choose to fix it. It's all about choice. We all have the choice to make things better in our lives. Regardless of what cards we have been dealt, it's our choice to fix it. Or to live in the cycle of doom and gloom and misery. It is all a choice. And the sooner you realize that it is a choice, the sooner you give yourself your power back. Yes, horrible things happen in life. Yes, we encounter and endure things that aren't great sometimes. But two can be true. You can acknowledge that that is a fact in your life. And you can also choose to not let that be your life. The choice is ours at the end of the day. What we decide is what we get. You have the choice to improve your life. You have the choice to make your life better for you. You don't have to be consumed by these things, but the sooner we take the time to figure out who we are to us, or at least who we want to be for us, the sooner we can start making progress towards that. But you have to acknowledge things. And full circle moment, I think that's why sometimes it's scary to be with your thoughts. Because your thoughts will show you exactly who you are at all points. And this idea that you've outgrown things or you're not that person anymore, you're always that person. It's always going to be a part of you. But you have the choice and the ability to acknowledge that. And to embrace this new self and to learn from that and to see that part of you with empathy, understanding, and hold space for an old version of you that does not exist in this current timeline in your life. But you have to sit with your thoughts. You have to understand why it's important to understand yourself better. We only get to do this once. This is our first and last rodeo. And I know it doesn't feel like that sometimes, but the sooner we become aware of that, that we're not here for time and time again. I mean, depending on your beliefs, but we just get one shot at this, guys. So it's best to start facing ourselves and start understanding ourselves and doing the things that we love sooner rather than later. Don't let life give you a wake-up call. Life is always passing us by. Always. I mean, hell, I blinked and the year's over. At least that's how it felt. And what does that mean for me? What does that mean for us? When you reflect on the year, was it... were there memories made? Were there experiences? Were there moments of growth, of love, of joy, of excitement? And what are those moments? And why? And how can you have more of those this upcoming year? How can you have more of those today? We always look so far into the future, but I don't know what the future holds. But I know I'm here today, and I know I have an opportunity to be my best self for me, which in turn is my best self for those around me. Life is beautiful, guys. It's worth living. It's worth exploring. But only if you take a hold of it and take a hold of your thoughts and all that lie within it. Anyways, guys, thank you guys for being here during my morning reflection. The sun is fully up by now. It's a beautiful morning here. It's not as cool as it's been, but beautiful morning no less. So now I'm going to finish up my coffee and get started for the day. But I appreciate you and every one of you for joining me. And I might do more of these moving forward, just morning reflections. Well, not might, I will. And I appreciate the feedback. I appreciate any insight. And I appreciate each and every one of you. And I hope you guys have an incredible day, an incredible week. And as always, be a little better every day. Thank you, guys.